tough phone call is coming up in hour number three. The Big Head, James Kelly, and Big Head Betts at the top. But right now, we are joined by a reporter for Fox Sports, a national college football insider for The Athletic, the man behind the annual Freaks List for The Athletic. He is also a New York Times bestselling author, completely plugged in. He is Bruce Feldman. Bruce, good to have you back. How are you?
Doing great, Jim. Good to be on with you today.
Always good to have you, Bruce. Thanks for making time for us. Now, you've got a piece up on The Athletic about the hot seat in college football. There are already openings, Bruce, at USC, UConn, Georgia Southern. Before we get into the specifics, how many other big jobs do you expect to see open up this year?
It could be as many as another half dozen, Jim. I mean, there's a bunch that are really, I think, either touch and go, or if those staffs really struggle over the second half of the season, I think you will see some athletic directors and some big money boosters get really frustrated and pull the plug. It happens every year when you think, oh, these schools don't have the money to do it, and then somehow they find the money to make a big move. So I would expect at least a few of these, if not maybe a half dozen significant big, like, Power 5 job that could spring open.
Bruce Feldman is joining us, so why don't we break down some of these, Bruce? Like, for instance, it was not that long ago that LSU won a national championship, then they go 5-5 last year, they're 3-3 right now. Given the expectations at LSU, is Ed Orgeron coaching for his job right now?
Yeah, I mean, right now, on the story I did on The Athletic this week, his seat is scorching hot. I mean, it's crazy in one sense because, as you said, I mean, he's less than 2 years away from not only leading them to a national championship, but arguably it was the biggest season any program has ever had when they went 15-0, and, you know, it was an amazing story. And then last year, obviously 5-5, they have struggled this year. I think the things that have hurt him was he made a really bad hire with Bo Pelini as a defensive coordinator. And then this year he had an offensive coordinator job and a defensive coordinator job. He went with two very inexperienced play callers, and they've struggled. I mean, both guys are pretty green. It's not to say they can't continue to develop and prove to be good coordinators. But I think that, coupled with the fact that they have had an insane amount of injuries, I mean, you're talking about arguably the six best players in the program are now out for the season with injury. So, and then on top of that, you have the fact that he's working for an AD, Scott Woodward, who did not hire him. And a lot of ADs want to hire their own guy. And so here we are, even less than 2 years removed from a national title, unless there have some really surprising upsets, including this weekend where they're a double-digit underdog at home against Florida. I think you're going to see a coaching change there.
We are talking to Bruce Feldman. All right, Bruce, what about the situation in Nebraska? Nebraska's 3-4 this year, and as a result, Scott Frost is on your list as well. Now, the argument could be made that all four losses have been by one score, but the team is 5-16 in one-score games under Frost. How damning is that for him, and does this end badly for him there too?
It's troubling for him. I think at this point, a lot of people there, including key decision makers, really are hoping he can show them enough signs that they can keep him. You look at the schedule, there's a couple of games with Iowa and Ohio State where it's possible they could pull a big upset and win, but the rest of the schedule is very winnable games. I think the key thing is not to lose some of these other games where, if you're looking at 4-8, especially where you started the year with a really bad loss, to an Illinois team that's a total rebuild. So I think they've had close losses. I think there's been some encouraging signs, but it's like they found some ways to lose games that I think they were right there in. They need some good things to happen. I think everybody there wants to keep Scott Frost. He did an amazing job at UCF. He's obviously the former player, a favorite son there. I think and this is a big if they struggle and sputter, they have Minnesota, who's pretty banged up, they play this weekend, there are definitely winnable games. If they somehow don't get past 4-8, or I think then it's dicey. But right now, I mean, I would think he has a really good chance of keeping his job.
All right, then. Bruce Feldman joining us. Now, Bruce, speaking of coaching changes, Lane Kiffin makes his return to Knoxville tomorrow. You have another great piece, which is about Lane leaving Tennessee for USC back in 2010. For context, how would you sum up Lane's first and only season with the Volunteers?
Wildly polarizing, because in some sense he stepped on everybody's toes there, whether it was Urban Meyer in the SEC or even the commissioner of the conference at the time. He rubbed a lot of people wrong. He stirred up a lot of emotions. And yet he got those players at Tennessee to buy in. They almost beat Alabama when Alabama was number one. Urban's team at Florida at the time was a 30-plus point favorite against them. And everybody thought Urban's team was going to whip them and give them payback. And Tennessee gave them all they could handle. You know, they were 7-6, but I think there was a lot of promising signs. Recruits had bought in, and then all of a sudden, as we get into in that story on The Athletic, it was just such a mind-blowing that USC went for him, given all the tumultuous stuff that had come from his year, and they were in themselves in the middle of an NCAA investigation, but also that he bounced after 1 year. It's just crazy to go back and talk to folks about how the thing actually happened. But it's Lane Kiffin. It's never a dull moment with him.
Bruce Feldman's my guest. You know, Bruce, to that point, when he decided to take that USC job, he texted a few people close to USC, and one source who heard from Lane said, quote, "We were like, what the bleep? Literally minds blown. That's bleeping ridiculous/awesome. End of quote. It's a great quote. Did Kiffin have any idea what he was about to walk into in terms of sanctions when he took that USC job?
No, he had no clue. I believe that because people I talked to at USC said, you know, we had no clue that they all thought they were going to get hit with a slap on the wrist. And Mike Garrett and the USC athletic department had really kind of, they did not kind of go with their heads bowed to the NCAA through that process. They were, there was a lot of kind of just kind of shrug your shoulder and kind of wave them away. And the NCAA took it out on USC with some devastating sanctions. As, you know, look, Kiffin got them 10-2. They beat a really good Oregon team on the road. There was a lot of positive signs the first year. But then once those sanctions really took effect, it just started to spiral down the drain. And I think, looking back, you know, I'm not sure who could have taken that program through and done a great job there. It was just given what the sanctions were. But there was always so much drama around there with USC, with Lane, too. I mean, it's a really interesting piece of this, especially when you consider, hey, the USC job is open now again, and Lane Kiffin's stock is hot. And it's probably going to get a lot hotter in terms of the 4-1. You look at how their schedule sets up. You look at, they probably have one ranked opponent left to play the rest of the way, especially if they get by this road trip at UT. I'm not saying USC is going to roll the dice for Lane Kiffin again, but there's going to be a lot of, his name is going to come up with a bunch of ADs who are going to say, how much different is he now? How much has he grown? Because I think nobody questions how sharp of an offensive mind he is. And, you know, in that regard, I think he's kind of an interesting story to keep an eye on.
Hey, Bruce, I'm like you. I'm not saying that USC is going to roll the dice and bring him back. I am saying I hope they roll the dice and bring him back. That would just be the most amazing thing. What about USC then? Bruce, to your point, they have another head coaching search now. How do you see that going, and what kind of a coach at this point would be the right fit for them?
I still think James Franklin is the top target for them. I mean, he did an amazing job at Vandy. He's done a really, really good job at Penn State. He's been there a long time. And to me, the biggest point for him, Penn State's a good job. He's from Pennsylvania. But at the same time, there is no Ohio State in the Pac-12 South, you know, and that, I think, is different. You have a guy who I think his personality would fit well in L.A. I think one of the things that maybe a tougher sell for not just James Franklin, but whoever they, being USC, would be looking at is, you know, it's not like a lot of these coaches come from places where they can live 10 or 15 minutes away from their office. And, you know, it's living in L.A., everything is 30 or 40 minutes away. And also when it comes to the staff, you know, yes, head coach is going to be paid a ton of money to get the USC job. The staff, though, relative to the cost of living, how did those coaches feel about, hey, my coordinators, my position coaches, my support staff, the money's not going to go that far in Southern California because it's cost so much to live out here. So I think that some of those are the challenges for any coach. I think they're going to consider to make a big jump. I still think it's a great job because no program is built with such a power dynamic where it's slanted compared to the rest of the league, right? And there's still a ton of kids, talented kids on the West Coast, and many of them grew up dreaming of being Trojans. I think you can still get that buy-in if you have the right program. But there are some challenges with the job that we'll see how much of a commitment financially that the leadership at USC is prepared to make at this point to kind of get them get the program out of the ditch right now.
I think you're right. Bruce, I got about 60 seconds, so let me ask you a similar question. Manny Diaz is still in Miami, but under fire as well. What about that Miami job? It would seem like that would be a great, great job because of the tradition and local talent, but is that job tougher than it looks?
It is in terms of this. Manny Diaz has an $8 million buyout. If they are going to move forward from him, and that's an if at this point, not a definite, but if they are going to move forward, it's not like Miami does not have the money of like some of these other programs that make big moves. Like Auburn, you know, got rid of Gus Malzahn. They paid a fortune to do it. And Miami is not that way. Unless they're going to tap into somebody like The Rock and say, hey, can you help us bring, say, Mario Cristobal back home? But it's going to cost a lot of money to make it happen. I don't know who Miami kind of taps into to make big moves where you're going to say, hey, we're going to move on from him. I don't know if they would try to bring Mark Stoops back. He's done a great job at Kentucky. He was a Miami assistant 20 years ago. I don't know what their plan would be and what kind of resources they would actually have. That is the part that is a big question mark, because you have all the talent in the world in your backyard. You have a lot of potential there. But right now, it's been a long time since Miami's actually been very good.
Nailed that. A reporter for Fox Sports, a national college football insider for The Athletic. He is the man behind the annual Freaks List for The Athletic and a New York Times best-selling author and a good friend of the program. Nice job, Bruce. Appreciate you. Thanks so much for doing that.
Thanks for having me, Jim. Always a pleasure.
Me too, Bruce. Always a pleasure to talk to you. When we come back, we have the top of hour number three, which belongs to the Big Head, James Kelly. Big Head Betts.